And when we'd build a fire in there, just as soon as we got a fire started, it gets darn hot, we did have to get out. That is all there was to it. So we had to cut a hole through the roof and put a trap door in. And we had that trap door open, but any time we had a fire, we had to have a trap door open. And, of course, our stove, we let it set right on the ground. So that warmed up the ground, too, and our cabin stayed nice and warm. Well, we didn't do much around. One stayed with the cabin about all the time, because we didn't know then that the Eskimo wouldn't steal, of course. And, their first trip up there, they would come up just prowling around, it seems, and we couldn't talk to them. We couldn't, that old sign language, it wouldn't work. And I couldn't understand the word they said, and they couldn't understand the word we said, and motion didn't seem to make any difference. And so I give one of them a plug of tobacco. I figured that is about the way to get at them. And next day, here he come with fox skins, and he brought me two for that plug of tobacco. Well, they was worth about $6 a piece. They was old skins that he'd caught the year before. We got a lot of old skins, but they were well kept and not well stretched, but we stretched them over and made a pretty nice looking fur out of them. But then we learned how. They would come up and we'd give them tobacco or sugar or anything they wanted. And next day they would come back with a darndest load of fur and ivory you ever seen. I got one piece of ivory that is just, I don't know, I figured it was awful valuable. It was a walrus tusk and an awful big one, but it's a dark brown, and on it was something that looked like a leaf, and it was awful near black. That must have been an awful old piece of ivory. But now I don't know about their dogs over there. There wasn't over a half a dozen dogs in that village. And I don't remember now of seeing a sled in that village. Now, there might have been. Or they might not have used many dogs. I don't know. Or it might have been like it is on our side. Come a tough winter, sometimes a lot of their dogs used to starve to death. They didn't have enough to eat themselves, and their dogs would starve to death. Now, they might have had a spell like that on the other side, and that might not have been the reason why they didn't have dogs. Another reason might have been that they, just rough country, and they didn't use them. I don't know. I couldn't say about that. But I think there was about 30 Indians altogether in the camp, and the men would be gone quite a bit, no doubt out trapping. So we never got a good look at it, but about, maybe 12, 15 of them. That we got to know when we seen them, at least. Women didn't monkey around as much. And when we'd go there, they'd kind of stay out of sight. But what I think happened, when them darn Russians come up there, they come up to trade, of course, that's what they come up there for. And they see these overhauls and shirts on these Indians, because, gee, they wanted them. We were sorry they didn't bring lots of them, because they were nuts about them. And what they wore looked like homemade stuff. It was wool, I'd say. But I'd say it was all homemade. Of course, they had a lot of skins, tan skins that they had clothes made of. And then, of course, they had their own fur. But they did have some trousers and some shirts that looked like they'd made them themselves and looked like, you know, no material that I'd ever recognize. And it's so dirty you wouldn't recognize it anyhow. But anyhow, they would go out and be gone. Oh, seemed to be quite a long time at one time, and no doubt after fur. But, come spring, we had quite a bit of trade goods left. We'd went over there for gold and fur, of course. We figured we'd trade for fur and mine gold and what have you. Well, summer didn't come until we got there late in the fall. It had begun to freeze up. And we had to get something up quick before it froze on us. Well, we decided that we'd go back with the fur we had. And after this bunch come down the river, I don't know how far up they were, but after they come down the river in their big boat, and we traded for all of their fur and give them everything we had, well, we decided we'd go back home over the other side and get a better boat and a better outfit and come back and really trade and make a great big barrel of money. And that's what we was figuring on when the Russians showed up. Of course, when they showed up, we just didn't do anything. They come in and took about, two-thirds of our stuff, I think. Just took it off our boat and threw it on there. And they started away and didn't even get out of sight. And they just turned around and come back. They had a little steamer, little pot-bellied thing, 5 men on it. And, of course, they stood guard with the rifles while they had two of them throwing our stuff onto their boat. Well, they come back then, and we had that little dinghy that we went from, was going from our boat to shore. We'd beached our boat, of course, during the winter, but to get it out of the ice. But we was all ready to come back. And these folks had come down river and left again. And they had no women with them. And there was about 12 of them, I believe. But lots of fur. So we just figured that we had panned a little and got gold, but not no big amount, nothing big at all, but yet it looked awfully good. So we figured we'd go back and get us a better boat and everything and come back and really make a fortune. I think we would have if it hadn't been for them darn Russians coming in. Well, when they took everything and peeled out, we did have enough at shore in our cabin to live about a week and a .22 rifle. And quite a bit of ammunition, so we wasn't really stuck. But the lucky thing for us that those Indian Eskimos was plumb tickled with that little dinghy. They used to look at it a lot and stand around it a lot, and they was awful interested. And they'd pick up the oars, get little short oars, about 6 foot long. They'd pick up them and look at them, and boy, they did admire that little dinghy. And the boat, well, of course, after the Russians had left us there, why, the Indians come up, and they seemed to be awful mad. I don't know whether they were or not, but I suspicion they was. They didn't like the way the Eskimos had treated us. We just figured the Eskimos didn't treat them so good anyhow. But anyhow, we finally traded our little dinghy and the .22 rifle and the ammunition for one of their walrus skin boats. They're all lashed together, too, and they're made of driftwood, most of it, some whalebone in it, not much. But most of it was driftwood, I think. It couldn't be anything else. That they had split and hewed out and made this frame, then put the walrus hide over. You know, they used that walrus hide on their boat for a year or a summer. Then that winter, they put it with the flesh out. And then that winter, why, they used it for soles and mukluks and thongs and things like that. But they use it on their boat a year. I don't know why that is. That the salt water seems to do something for it, or take that grease out, or what it is, I don't know. But on both sides of on our side and the Russian side, they use these walrus hides. Either leave them lay in the salt water all summer, or put them on the boat all summer. Then use them for tow lines and, well, everything that they use a hide for. I've often wondered why, and I've often wondered why those Indians over there, now that dog over there with the blue-eyed Siberian, he was just the same as the dog on our side, far as you could see. There was every village had a different strain, I'd say, of dogs, and this was still a different strain over there. But those over there were all blue-eyed. Now, the country was very mountainous and very rugged. We didn't get back into the mountains at all because it all some, of course, but not enough to really find out what is what. But after the boat left, well, we did a little more panning, and we got some pretty good results. I believe we're going to go over there and really find a lot of gold. And while the fur over there is white fox mostly and mink, they have some other, of course, but most of it is white fox and mink. They get a few wolves, but don't seem to be many. But I just can't tell too much about them folks over there, their religion and way of thinking and the like, because, I just couldn't talk to them, never did get used to talking to them all the time I was there. I've got to put on another derail now, Dick, and I'm really getting a kick out of this, so don't worry. I think I'm going to try and get you 3 reels out on this at this one time. And so I'll put on another reel now and get after the dog team. several years. I just fell in love with the country. I liked it a lot, and it is awfully good fur there. But I come into Copper Center, and after I'd been up and fixed up my cabin for the winter and had my dogs packed and following me. So I hooked up my sled on the very first snow, and as soon as I crossed the Copper River, come down to Copper Center for a load of provisions. I'll just get some stuff and get some mail and one thing or another. They was, got to talking about some fully gnome. His name was Groshaw. And he was going to drive from Nome to the Central of Progress in Chicago. Now, there'd been several tried that trip, and none of them had made it. And, of course, then I went to shooting off my mouth. I said, oh, I can't do it. He's driving huskies. There's only one dog in the world that'll make it, and that's the wolf. And, you know, everybody in Alaska that's got a little woolly pooch under each arm has got the best dog team in Alaska. Some of them old prospectors there, you know, old fellas get pretty slow, and a team get, a dog get too slow for a good team, and, well, maybe 7, 8 years old, and they'll give them some of them old prospectors. You could think they'd use them a good home. You'd have 3 or 4 of them, and they'll go along, oh, 5 or 6 miles an hour, and the old fellow's, you know, kind of stiff, and he thinks he's got the best dog team in Alaska. He'll tell you every day about it. Well, that's where everybody is, so there's no disgrace about bragging about your dog. But anyhow, I just went into hysterics about Groshaw. He just couldn't make it, and that I had the only team that could make it, and kept on bragging, and finally somebody said, hey, yours are darn good, why don't you do it? I said, I'm going to. I said, just what I'm out for. I said, I'm just going back now and get my outfit, and I'm going to head out just as soon as the snow gets good. Well, I just bragging, never thought much about it. I went back upriver and was gone about 10 days. And I come back out, and Lord, about the first thing I heard on the radio, when I come out, that Slim Williams was going to drive his dog teams to Washington, D.C. They'd raised the ante on me about 900 miles. Paper was full of it, and I had a stack of mail there that you couldn't chim, and some from the Automobile, or the Highway Association from in Alaska. They had, I'd got up an association, and was working to get a highway to Alaska, and Donald McDonald was at the head of it, and a very good friend of mine. So he had had me a half a dozen letters. Why don't you go? And you gotta go. Well, I was in such a fix that I just couldn't well back out. And about the only thing I was doing to go or get kitted out of Alaska. And I had no intention to go and start on, but I thought, well, by gee, after all, why not? And so I just hooked up my dogs and started. We kind of straightened things up there a little bit. Didn't take long. Well, Indians around, the old Indians around Copper Center, of course, I knew them, traded with all of them, friends with all of them, and they heard about it. And now any place that, when you start for the States cross country, they think you're going into the big flat country. They don't quite understand the map, but there's a